icons.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jamie Torres. I'm a Hostess Community College student. I come to you with my fellow peers from American University in Cairo, and we're bringing to you the International Solution Global Inequalities, GSACS program, Sustainable Development Goals number 10. So today we're doing a podcast, and I think everyone knows that housing inequalities are going difficult these days. Join me and my fellow students that I'm studying finance, where some of us are doing biology, business management, and accounting, as well as engineering, and we'll be adding our inputs in housing inequality and the SDG 10 program. Hello, everyone. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
SACS program, Sustainable Development Goals number 10. So today we're doing a podcast, and I think everyone knows that housing inequality is going difficult these days. Join me and my fellow students that I'm studying finance, where some of us are doing biology, business management, and accounting, as well as engineering, and we'll be adding our inputs in housing inequality and the SDG 10 program. Hello, everyone. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Welcome, Omar Halal from American University in Cairo. Omar, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Omar, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so I'm a junior at AC, and I'm currently studying biology as a pre-med. Hopefully, I'll be joining medical school after I graduate.
Best of luck. So before we start, what is the SDG 10 program?
Okay, so basically the SDGs, or the Sustainable Development Goals, are 17 goals that were proposed by the UN. And these 17 goals aim at ending poverty and improving health and education, reducing inequalities and stimulating economic growth. So hopefully what the UN is trying to achieve here is having a prosperous and peaceful world where everyone is having equal opportunities. And the UN hopes to achieve these goals by 2030. And coming to SDG 10, so basically SDG 10 is the 10th goal, and it's aimed at reducing inequality. And it aims at eliminating unequal distributions of opportunities that might be caused by things such as income, sex, age, disability, race, class, or ethnicity, or religion.
I'm going to introduce my fellow classmate, Amy. I think she has a question for you.
Hi, Jamie. Hi, Omar. How are you guys?
Hi, Amy.
Omar, I wanted to ask you, can you give us any examples of this inequalities?
Sure. So, there is a study by the UN that actually claims that women and children die each day from curable diseases due to the lack of access to healthcare. And another report by the UN also states that 1 in 5 individuals reported being discriminated against by discrimination prohibited by international human rights law.
Wow, that is very interesting. But why is this important? How is this relevant?
So that's a good question. So you see, the UN argues that inequalities of different shapes hinder social and economic development. Not only that, but the UN also states that inequalities can actually affect your mental health.
Wow. Can you elaborate a little more on this?
Yeah, so all of this can actually lead to increased poverty, diseases, crime rates, and therefore sustainable development cannot be achieved with that in place.
So what you're saying is that we should include everyone in order to make the world a better place.
Yeah, exactly.
But why did you guys in AUC decide to talk about this?
Well, Egypt has actually received $264 million from the UN as funding for the SDGs. And with SDG 10 receiving around 2.10% of that, so that's $5.6 million. Also, currently, the UN is actually implementing 328 important SDGs or SDG-related activities all around Egypt. So, and Cairo has the most SDG activities, like it's around 57 activities.
264.4 million, wow, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is. And that is because actually Egypt has a lot of educational, gender, healthcare, and housing inequality. And actually, it was found that Egypt has one of the largest wealth gaps in the world. In turn, a study that was done actually in 2021 by a professor called Abu Kafar. And he actually, that's in turn, you find a lot of inequalities, such as having inequality widespread in cities like Cairo, this study has found actually. And the study continues by saying that a lot of this inequality can actually lead to instability, and neither the government nor the UN want that. And therefore, the Egyptian government is currently trying to fulfill Egypt's vision of 2030.
Wow, that is some good to know information right there. I want to introduce another fellow classmate, Jonathan, who I believe has a couple of questions for you as well.
Yeah, hey, Jamie, hey, Omar.
Hi.
Wow, I could see this is a very interesting matter for Cairo, but why Cairo?
Actually, Cairo is where the housing inequality is most present. For example, the government is currently building a city called New Capital City, which costs around $45 billion. And this city overlooks many slums and impoverished settlements that might not even have electricity or running water. And most likely, these settlements will get removed to allow room for the multi-billion dollar projects. And a study actually found that by the same person that we mentioned before, actually found that most of Egypt's 2030 vision is focused on addressing the housing and slum problem in major urban areas like Cairo.
That was very informative, Omar. Moving on, please welcome Joseph and Giselle.
Thank you. Hey, Giselle.
Hi, Joseph.
Hello.
Hi. Joseph, I also have a couple questions for you about our research during this project. Joseph, tell us some of the research regarding about housing inequality in New York.
Sure, Giselle. The research on the SDG program number 10 that is based on housing inequalities in the Bronx, New York, and in Cairo, Egypt. And the housing inequalities mean very much to the state because where you may live affect lives in a positive and negative way. According to the lives that can be affected, there's an article according to David E. Jacobs, which has a PhD. He said, "The physical infractions in houses make human interactions possible and provide shelters. How well the infrastructure performs and which groups it serves have an important implications for social equity and health. It's a fact that housing can help strive, but housing is running income and affordability in New York City is very low."
It's good to go deeper, and that is very informative what you tell us. Justice, can you give us an example how housing inequality can affect the
Sure. I agree with David in the article that the environment can determine factors of getting into schools or maybe be viewed in a certain way. For example, the buildings and houses make a community form and provide shelter. The structures of the environment and health that serves an importance for the social equity and health is beyond great. In the Bronx, there are housing inequalities that have remained unchanged, such as race, Hispanic, Black, and White areas of living. This is because of income-based housing, racism, and disabilities in the communities.
Okay, that's great. Yes, it's good to know that we are having the inequalities, but we are working on it. Can you talk a little more about how important is your income to determine your housing opportunities?
There's three variations to break down as an income living in New York. Number one is low-income housing, two is middle-class housing, and three is wealthy-rich housing. These variations are divided by neighborhoods, shopping areas, sceneries, and race. For instance, the middle-class housing system, which would be located in Manhattan, which is a high maintenance compared to low income. These houses in Manhattan are very well looked after by maintenance and by the government, and also its community. Because of that, income in that area is very high, that is the reason for it. As for low-income houses in poor areas where hardly any flow of income is provided, is provided. These low-income poor areas with hardly any flows are not well kept. There's garbage on the streets, homeless people around the areas, and it's hard because these boroughs end up being the Bronx. David mentioned without functioning, protective, and equitable housing stock, people's very survivals are individuals and as a community would not be possible because housing provides shelter from the elements, access to food, clean water, clothing, and other basic necessities. That is some of the point of views that New Yorkers have. Hope that answered your question, Giselle.
Sure.
Giselle. So I have a question for you, Giselle. What do you think the government does for housing?
So, well, according to an article I read in by Mihir Saveri, the New York Times, was written on the June 13, 2021, New York City leaders has been vexed for decades by problems that help turn the city into a worldwide symbol of inequality. Furthermore, all of the leading candidates agreed that housing is a top issue with a huge implication for the New York future. For the year period ending the 2020, about 192,000 new units were built. Mayor Bill de Blasio had created a plan in 2014 promising to create 80,000 new affordable units over the 10 years. The initiative has created about 62,557 new affordable units.
Interesting, Zeb. Nice. What resources did you come up with according to this topic?
Okay, based on the research, I realized about housing inequality, according to CSS Community Service Society report that 40% of the New York City low-income families live in rent-controlled and rent-established apartments, twice as many as live in the public and subsidized house. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development Public of Future Local News, March 22, 2022, were specified. HUD announced $229 million to New York to advance equitable disaster recovery, build climate resilience.
Wow.
So, Daniel, I'm back in here real quickly. Excuse me for that. We heard Joseph, we heard from Giselle talk to us about how the housing inequalities look in the Bronx. How does the housing inequality look like in Cairo? Please talk to us regarding research about that, Daniel, if you could.
Okay. So I'll introduce myself real quick. I'm Daniel. I'm a student in the UC studying business and entrepreneurship. So basically, according to an Egypt-based research it conducted on housing inequality in 2020 by Nadim Gawad, a political economist and researcher, this research states that Egypt's rising has
Yes, Daniel.
Housing units unattainable to millions of Egyptians. So basically, Gawad writes that the study conducted by the Sustainable Development Strategy 2030, which is an initiative in Egypt, in 2016 found that the C-class housing market has a shortage of 2.5 million housing units. In addition, the study found that more than one third of the Egyptian population lack access to suitable housing. Furthermore, Gawad adds that high-end housing projects that are being built by real estate developers are actually causing housing prices to rise even further. Moreover, Gawad claims that the majority of the built environment budget is allocated to new real estate projects at the expense of impoverished settlements. So all of this widens the gap between the C-class housing market and the high and middle-class housing markets. I hope that gives you a little bit of background information on housing inequality in Cairo.
That is very interesting information. Thank you so much for further introducing yourself as well. I think what Gawad has been saying makes sense. You know, I mean, we can see all the new projects popping up everywhere in Egypt and Cairo and New York, you know, it's where we all can see it. Danny, where do we stand regarding the research study? Do you agree or disagree with it?
Honestly, I would say that I agree with Gawad. I've personally seen examples of the new high-end cities, such as the new Al Amin City, being allocated large amounts of money yet such cities are not considered as affordable options to the majority of the population. Actually, Gawad mentions this and reasons that not even the cheapest housing option will be affordable for the majority of Egyptians. In addition, Gawad argues that the new Alawin city's cost, which is around 5 billion Egyptian pounds, is very close to Cairo's spending on infrastructure, which is 5.8 billion Egyptian pounds. So this is huge, to be honest.
I really see that. The numbers are big as well, 5.8 billion. That's interesting. I don't know. I didn't know all of that, you know. All of that wasn't, this is new information you're bringing to my ears.
Yeah, so that was pretty interesting when I was researching it. So, however, it should be noted that cities such as the new Alamein city are being marketed as touristic destinations and not as residential projects. Also, the Egyptian Minister of Housing, Essem Gozar, has stated that new Alamein city has seen around $4 billion USD of investment and has provided around 100,000 job opportunities. Therefore, I think having such cities is pivotal and important for economic growth.
Very nice, very nice. I think I agree with you. It makes sense, you know? You have cities such as New Alamein City to generate entrepreneurial opportunities and investments that will eventually, you know, induce economic growth. Can you tell us more about the differences between SDG 10 and the housing inequalities in Egypt and other countries in the region?
Of course. So basically, different countries have different reduced inequalities and therefore different responses to the SDG 10. For example, in Saudi Arabia, the SDG 10 response is mainly focused around human rights, as the Saudi government has established a Human Rights Council and has been nominated to the UN's Human Rights Council for the fourth time. Also, there are programs such as Hafiz and Sanad that ensure equal job opportunities and provide job training to job seekers. This increased focus on human rights is because human rights issues have been a more pressing issue in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Therefore, we do not see an increased SDG 10 response focused on housing inequality in Saudi Arabia as we do in Egypt, because it's not as prominent as it is in Egypt.
Right, I see. So with 5.6 million USD allocated to the SDG, what is the Egyptian government doing to fulfill SDG 10 and reduce housing inequalities?
Okay, so basically, the Egyptian government has put forth the Egyptian government's sustainable development strategy, which is called Egypt Vision 2030, which should solve many social and economic problems. The urban strategy primarily addresses slums and housing inequalities. The Egyptian government aims to narrow the gap between the housing units for the low and high and middle income markets. In fact, the Egyptian government has currently spent $2.3 billion on the development of slums and is expected to spend $20.3 billion on projects that will revitalize the slums. These projects should provide more adequate housing units to the low-income class of citizens. Such projects are being worked on and implemented mainly by the Ministry of Housing.
Wow, this is a good thing, you know? Though to see the government putting in such a huge amount of money for the rehabilitation of the slums and for eventually combating the housing inequalities, you know? But it's just the government. Who's working on this issue? Who else is working on this issue? Are there any NGOs helping the government?
Yes, actually, many of the SDG 10 activities are being implemented by NGOs. For example, Refuge Egypt, an NGO, which was established in 1987 to help refugees, is providing job training for many minorities and refugees.
And what about housing inequalities? Any NGO solely focused on that?
Of course, I can give an example. One example is Tadamoon. Tadamoon is an initiative that believes that all citizens have the right to adequate housing and a decent standard of living. They have helped find solutions to many urban challenges and have helped many citizens find adequate and affordable housing.
This is very interesting to see. So many initiatives that are dedicated and focused on helping communities solve inequality. Now we'll introduce our guest speaker for our podcast today, Mr. Josh Cohen, and get a little of his insight.
Hi, my name is Josh Cohen. I'm a property manager and landlord. I'm 55 years old, and I work and live in New York, and I've been doing this for 30 years.
Thank you so much, Josh. Thank you for being a part of this. As we explained to you previously, The SDG group is people that came together from Cairo, Egypt, and New York, and both of those people are trying to find a way to find solutions to certain inequalities that's going on. Different groups pick different topics. We all came together as a group and we chose housing inequality as the topic. So we're just going to have two questions today, a little brief look on how do you feel about the SDG program and what is maybe a solution that could help the SDG program. So Omar, would you like to start it off by maybe asking the first question?
Yeah, sure. So it's quite interesting that we're with someone who's actually hands-on experience with the housing issue. And I would like to know your take, Mr. Josh, on the SDG 10 and how it relates to housing inequality. So like, what's the progress? What's the impact that you have had on this issue and what's the progress that you're at right now?
I agree there are housing issues and there are housing shortages and there's a tremendous homeless issue and housing problem in New York and the tri-state area where I work and live. As a landlord, I'm the person who actually chooses and screens the individual tenant before they move into a building. And there's always some natural biases because everybody has inherent bias in them. You know, whenever you have a conversation or meet anyone, you come with a set of values and thoughts already in your mind. But as far as bias in the system or inherent bias, I don't see much of it. Personally speaking, if I have five applications for people in front of me, I look at the numbers and I look at the application. On the applications, it doesn't say what color, what religion, what biases, what sexual preference people have. None of that is ever considered. It's against the law. And landlords don't really care about that. So there might be bias, but I think a landlord or a property manager really does go by the numbers in front of them. The bias comes in the sense of money and a financial stability of a tenant. If someone doesn't have a job or because of the economy, they have short-term jobs or part-time jobs, then that can prevent them from getting housing. But is the fact that a manager or landlord like myself doesn't accept someone with a unstable financial situation, is that bias or is there a different word for it? So that's my take on it because I'm the one who has to make the decision. The tenant who gets rejected and can't live anywhere thinks that I'm being biased because I didn't accept them. But how could I accept someone if they don't have a stable job or money in the bank or don't have a social security number? I mean, is that bias? I don't think so. So from my point of view, I see very little bias in that regard. The bias is financial bias, but I don't think bias is the right word.
So you feel that the financial inequalities are, it's what's affecting the housing system at the moment?
I do.
The fact that people don't have any money and to be able to pay for their housing and shelter?
I think it's money, but
the SDG program should find ways to help people financially as well as coming up with ways of solving inequalities.
Exactly. It financial help. And I've seen some government programs in the Bronx, and it's not just money, but where a caseworker is assigned to a family to help them and to explain to them what it takes to have an apartment in a nice building and to get along with other people.
Do you feel that your tenants are experiencing inequality through these sort of programs and these people?
The government programs I'm sorry, Jamie.
And these different organizations, excuse me, I wanted to use that.
There are many government organizations that provide financial relief to people so they could live in an apartment. It does seem that the application process and the acceptance process isn't always fair, but I don't make those decisions. I don't run a government agency. They have thousands and thousands of applications. So it is difficult to just pick one out of a hat and say it's not fair. You know, I would think that maybe a single mom with three kids should get money before a single man who's 30 years old who could work. But even saying something like that, isn't that discrimination? Why should a single man be discriminated against?
Even
so
that would be
every time we talk about something, we're just opening up another can of worms.
Okay.
Excuse us for that.
Yeah. So as I was saying, so you said that, you know, it makes sense that, that financial inequalities or financial problems actually result in preventing people from getting houses. And I had a question. So it happens that the facts on the ground are that minorities are the ones who are getting financially, you know, discriminated and thus, you know, they're prevented from getting houses and homes. So Jamie has I think he made it clear to me that you have dealt with minorities, you know, have helped certain minorities get housing and stuff. Can you clarify more on that?
Yes, at least 80% of my properties. I manage 500 units in the New York area, and at least 80% are minorities and low-income people. But like we were saying, I mean, I have to take someone who is financially stable over someone who's unemployed and not financially stable. And some people view that as discrimination. However you look at it, is poor people have a very hard time finding housing because they have no money. And there has to be some agency or program to assist poor people with housing, whether it's in a building with a private landlord like me, or if there's more government housing and the government just builds more apartment buildings to house low income and poor people. But if I do...
Because we don't want to hold you up too long today. I just had one more question and just your response on that, which is, what do you think is the future of reducing housing inequality? How do you feel is that? What can we do in the future to maybe make it an even playing field for the landlord as well as the people suffering this housing inequality in the Bronx, New York, and in Cairo?
Wow.
Egypt, excuse me.
Well, the answer is not to take it out on the private sector. That's surely the answer. So the government's going to have to come up with more innovative and interesting and fair programs to help poor people with money. In addition to that, though, there has to be a social aspect. There have to be caseworkers assigned instead of just giving random amounts of money out to poor people. They need to be tutored. They need to be educated a little bit on how to live in an apartment building with other people and not to play music at 3 a.m. And just because it's your bedroom, that doesn't mean you could do whatever you want. It doesn't work like that when there are 30 other people who could hear your music.
This adds to these inequalities, correct?
Right. So it's not just money. It's a little bit of education and some type of, an education has to go along with the money.
With finance, right?
In addition to, of course, maybe some more public housing, and maybe the government should build more housing. But if they are going to use the private sector to house people, they need to provide a little support, because what happens is if there's too much pressure on a landlord, there won't be any more landlords. I mean, why would I want to be a landlord and have buildings if I'm going to lose money and get harassed by the government? I'll find another way to make money. I'm a smart guy. I'll do something else. And that's what happens when the government puts too much pressure on the private sector and an entrepreneurial person. If I can't make money, I will find another job, and then there will be no housing.
Right. So Josh Cohen, we thank you so much for your help, for being a guest speaker with us today. Is there anything you want to ask us as a group?
Not at all, except that in any debate and conversation, you really have to try and be in the other person's shoes also. And so there's more than two sides to the story. There's the tenant side, the landlord side. There's the other tenants in the building side. There are many, many different ways to look at the issue. And that's what gets hard, not to just pigeonhole and look at one particular small case and say, oh, you know, this is unfair, you know, racism, bias, this, that, the other thing. It's really very complicated. And you have to try and look at all the different viewpoints. And there are many. It's not just two. There are three or four or five or six. So you got to really be open-minded about it before you come to a conclusion.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I think that what Mr. Cohen here said, thank you, Mr. Cohen, for that, was very fruitful. And I do agree. I think that, you know, that it is a housing issue is a very complicated thing that must be looked on from different perspectives, not just one perspective. And I was actually, you know, it was quite interesting to know that, to hear a landlord's perspective and listen to that actually, and hear that they actually have also have rights that that the government needs to put in mind, to keep in mind, and when dealing with this delicate issue of housing inequality. So it's definitely a complex issue, and I can already tell that it's not easy to solve, and I feel for the government, you know, and the people involved in this issue. And just wanted to relate this to what's happening in Egypt. I think what Mr. Cohen said regarding the government should be providing more housing, I think it's quite similar, you know, to the situation is similar in the regards with the government needing to provide more housing and to accommodate the homeless and, you know, the gap, as we said before, that there is a gap between the middle class citizens and the higher class citizens and lower class citizens. So I think that the government should accommodate for that by giving more public housing, you know, giving financial aid to those who are in need for apartments and such things. And I do believe in the power of education, as Mr. Josh has said. I think what might be different is that in Egypt, we don't have the issue of we don't have the landlords. I don't think that the private sector is as controlling when it comes to housing. I think there has, as we've said before in the research that we've referenced, that there is some influence, the private sector has some influence, but I think that the main problem caused in Egypt by the housing, especially in Cairo, that the housing inequality is being caused by, I think, the government's decisions taken over the years. I think so. I think that's been accumulating and was actually, as Dr. Gawed had said, the research that the study has made is actually found that the most of the housing inequality is actually from bad government spending over the years and government projects that were costing billions of dollars and you know, that actually took place on land or already had already impoverished settlements. So I think that the private sector doesn't have much of a say in that the issue in the Bronx as it does in the Bronx. So that's my take on that and how this relates to Egypt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cohen, for your input. We truly appreciate that. I think I agree with all the data presented today by Cairo today. Daniel, thank you so much. And Omar, thank you so much to Amy and Joseph and Giselle. And also we got another member from Cairo, Adham. If we could introduce yourself, Adham, and maybe we could get a little of your input. How do you think? And take a little home message and what home message you might have taken here.
Yes, of course, Jamia. How are you? How are you guys? I'm Adham, a mechanical engineering student in the American University in Cairo. And I think the take-home message here is that Egypt is currently receiving a lot of funding from the UN for achieving the SDG 10 and reducing inequalities. And as mentioned before, Cairo is where the housing inequalities is most present. However, as the studies have shown, Egypt's vision for 2030 includes a strong strategy for combating housing inequalities in Cairo, and hopefully establishing an equal housing market that
provides 10% by 2030 as well. So, you know, everything is going good. What do you think people can do to help the government efforts in reducing inequality? Did I get that already?
Well, I think a good thing to do is, I would have to say, is that people have to do the same like initiatives as Tadam and do. They should be educated about their housing rights and the laws governing them. Also, they should spread awareness regarding the housing inequalities and all of that.
Thank you very much. I truly agree. I truly agree. I want to thank everyone out of the podcast today, everyone from AUC, as well as everybody from HCC. Thank you so much. So that's it for our podcast today. Thank you, everyone. Adham, Joseph, Daniel, Giselle, Jonathan, Amy, and Omar. Thank you so much for joining us. and explaining to us that housing inequalities. Thank you to the SDG 10 program. Thank you to the GSACs. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Until the next time.